You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Binge eating disorder is formally recognized in the DSM-5. It's now the most common type of eating disorder in the United States. And Friday in Sacramento, Kara Richardson-Whiteley will talk about her experience and the latest research. Kara is an advocate with the Eating Recovery Center, also an author, and she's on the phone with us. Hi, Kara. Glad you could join us.
Thanks for having me.
So how do you explain binge eating disorder to someone who asks?
You know, it is a little bit hard to explain to someone. For me personally, it's something that I've done secretly for many, many years. And it's about, you know, eating until you're uncomfortably full. It's about, you know, seeking out food, doing it in secret. And for me, even though I ate in secret and had this really difficult relationship with food, it was something that I wore on my body because it showed up as excess pounds for many, many years.
Could you explain what a binge would be for you? What types of food, when, what amounts?
Right. That's a good question, and I think it varies for everybody. But for me, in the darkest moments of my struggle with binge eating disorder, it would be when I was hiding and replacing food. So, for example, you know, I'm a mom, and I would do the grocery shopping, and so I would buy some ice cream because that's what my husband and my daughter would like, and so we'd eat a normal portion. And then the next day when I was working from home, I might think, oh, I'll just have a scoop of ice cream. And then, you know, I'd go back for a cup of ice cream after lunch. And then by the afternoon, pretty much this half gallon of ice cream is completely gone. And so the thing about binge eating disorder is that oftentimes they present themselves as we present ourselves as very highly functioning. So I had a job, I had a child, a husband, a good relationship, and yet I was completely consumed by food. You know, I could be conquered by a cupcake, and so now I have to go replace the food, remove the amount that we had eaten the night before as if nothing had ever happened, because it felt so ridiculous and silly to try to explain to my husband that I ate this entire half gallon of ice cream. And so I think where it gets complicated and somewhat muddied is that, you know, this isn't just a battle of willpower and making positive choices, that this may be a biologically based illness for some people.
Clearly, it's much more complex than just eating a half gallon of ice cream. There's a reason that it's in the DSM-5. And would you explain what that is and why it is significant that this disorder has now been recognized?
Yeah, for me personally, it's important because it's not just the mechanical eating of the food or even the hiding it. It's how much food and this troubled relationship with food is actually really consuming to your life. And for me, it was a matter of, you know, being deceitful with my family about what I was eating and then feeling so guilty and shameful at any given moment about what I had eaten, how I feel in my body, and then it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. The worse I felt about myself, the more that I ate and I abused food, and then, you know, it just fulfilled itself. And then it became something that was so overwhelming. You know, I am just 40 years old, and I struggled with arthritis in my knees, which is terrible because I love to hike and mountain climb. And I could barely, you know, stand up from sitting at the couch because it was so overwhelmingly painful. And so I attribute a lot of that kind of pain, physical pain and emotional pain, to my struggle with binge eating disorder.
At the peak of the difficulty, how high was your weight, Kara?
Yeah, I think that, you know, for me personally, it was about 360 pounds. And so that's before I really started on a healthy path, before I ever climbed Kilimanjaro the first time. And that's when, you know, I wouldn't really check in with myself. I actually don't really know the exact weight because the highest weight on my scale was 350, and it was over that point. But for now, especially as I'm on the road to recovery, it's not so much about the number on the scale. And yes, my weight is far less than that now, but it's more about How healthy am I? Am I taking care of myself? Am I exercising as a way of feeling joy and wellness versus punishing myself? Am I putting good food into my body? And am I not fueling my emotions?
I think people just were caught by two things you said. Number one, the weight being over 360 pounds. But the second thing is you referred to climbing Mount Kilimanjaro, and we haven't even introduced that part of the story yet. And that's a big part of your story, and you've done it not only once.
That's right, but three times. You know, the first time was after a large weight loss. I felt like I was on top of the world, and people really noticed how much weight I was losing. And it was this really uncomfortable thing for me, because I should mention that I believe that my binge eating disorder is rooted with some pretty traumatic things in my life. My parents were divorcing when I was age 9, and I literally would hide in the pantry, and the sound of chewing would kind of drown out their screaming at each other. And then when I was 12, I was sexually assaulted, and the only thing I could think of to distract the person at the moment was to offer him something to eat. And it was such a strange moment that, you know, you might say that food saved me, but then it became this complex relationship that really consumed me. Mm-hmm. And so, when I was losing a tremendous amount of weight, it was really uncomfortable because I had used food for so long to cover myself. And I thought, well, I want to do something for charity. And all these people are asking me, you know, how are you losing all this weight? And they'd ask, you know, did you have the surgery? Are you on South Beach? And so I decided I would do a Kilimanjaro climb for charity. And so the first time was after that large weight loss. But then after about a year after that climb, I was pregnant. And like a lot of women who struggle with food, I put on more than half of that weight back on. Mm. And so I so desperately wanted to be in that place again of feeling, you know, like I've got this, and I wasn't. And so I tried to climb Kilimanjaro a second time, thinking this will get me in shape. I'm going to get this again, but I didn't do the legwork. I did kind of a half-hearted training regimen, but most importantly, I didn't conquer or at least get on the road to recovery with binge eating disorder. And in fact, probably the hardest thing I had to write in my book, Gorge, was about the fact that I actually binged the night before that second climb. Mm. So the third climb, even though I was still at a somewhat of a higher weight, was all about doing that work mentally and physically. And so, yes, it was like climbing and hiking and practicing while I was carrying another person on my body. But the most important thing was that I needed to love myself where I was and go from there. I needed to find a trainer who didn't treat me like a before and after picture. Hmm. I needed to build strength in my legs. And I also had to really work on the reasons behind binge eating disorder and how I react to that in the present day.
You're listening to Cara Richardson-Whiteley. She's an advocate for Eating Recovery Center, and she's written two books. One is titled Fat Woman on the Mountain, and she just referred to the second one. It's Gorge, My 300-Pound Journey Up Kilimanjaro. And you're going to be in Sacramento on Friday, aren't you, Cara?
That's right. I will be doing an event that's sponsored by Eating Recovery Center, I should say hosted by them, over at Arden Hills.
Okay, so just before we go in this last minute, a couple things. And if you just want to say myth or fact, we can get through a few points here. But young children are not affected by eating disorders. Is that a myth or a fact?
That's a myth.
The number of children under age 12 is actually rising, isn't it?
It is. It is. In fact, I believe that my binge eating disorder really started when I was about 9 years old. And, you know, I think it's also important to note that oftentimes binge eating disorder is just, you know, not really recognized. It might, you know, a doctor might focus on the actual weight than what might be behind that weight.
Okay, how about this one? Eating disorders mainly impact women, hardly ever men.
and that is a myth as well. I think it's 40% of those who struggle with binge eating disorder are male.
Wow. There is no genetic link. Is that a myth or a fact?
I'm not sure on that one. I think that that might be a myth.
Okay. Eating disorders can be deadly.
Well, that, of course, is a fact. You know, from anorexia, bulimia, and, of course, binge eating disorders, all of them are incredibly deadly. And it's important that, even if somebody is going through or has gone through the process of weight loss surgery, that that binge eating disorder is still there. And so it's something that needs to be talked about and, with a health professional, and you can go get an assessment on eatingrecoverycenter.com. You can go talk and with a healthcare professional about this might be something that might be struggling, that you might be struggling with.
And just as a PS, I'm looking here at more of the research that I have, and it does say that a high percentage of the risk factors for eating disorders are inheritable traits. So maybe that's one of the links that they will continue to explore. Mm-hmm. But Cara, you're such an interesting person to listen to and to talk with. I am really grateful that you made some time for the show today, and we'll post some links to help people who have more questions and want to learn more.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, and congratulations to you on all of your journeys and accomplishments. That's Cara Richardson-Whiteley. She'll be in Sacramento on Friday, and there's more at capradio.org/insight. This is Insight on Capital Public Radio.